attend the Yukon Historical Society, convened at the Pioneer Museum, Alaska Land, on October 24, 1970, has the pleasure of having Mr. Ed B. Davis guest, who will speak on the village or the town of Chena.
Ed B., it's all yours.
I wish to thank the president for asking me. And I'm on the spot here. It's fine. Here's Frank Young. Him and I were schoolmates in Dawson and Fairbanks. There's Boyd and Stella Herring that were schoolmates of my brother. And Mrs. Clara Rust, I know her as Miss Hickman. But let's us get on. In 1894, they had a panic in the United States, and in 1896, Carmack discovered gold in the Klondike, and that acted as pancreas because 100,000 took it in. It came in by the way of Skagway, Wrangell, Edmonton Trail, Cordova, and Dyea, but the best of them all was when they got on the boat and went to Nome and St. Michael's and came up to Dawson and Whitehorse without soiling their hands. And I was born in Seattle, 1894, and last Sunday I was 76. My father was mixed with that panic, so he came into Dawson the spring of 99, and my mother and I followed that fall. And we came here in 1906. And they asked me to talk about Chena. I could talk about the Fox, Dome Vault, Little El Dorado, and Chattanooga. They're all ghost towns. But it's hard to realize 1906 what there was, what roads there was. It went away from the railway. The railway was built in 1905 up to a place called Golden, was just about where the Pedro Monument is now. And then it took an 80-degree turn and went to Chattanooga in 1907. And they call that climbing the mountain. And this number one locomotive here is got just power enough to haul two loaded freight cars, so it was used from Fairbanks to Chena and out to Golden. And I'm getting ahead of myself. In 1901, Captain Barnett left St. Michael's with the steamer Lavelle Young, and they went to Tanana, where he got an Indian guide to help him. Then he got up to where Fairbanks is, or rather, he got up to where there is a bar. Impregnable sandbar right opposite the St. Joseph Hospital, where he couldn't get over, so he dropped down, and Captain Barnett fixed his trading post just about where the Nevada bar is now. And at the same year, 1901, Felix Pedro left the Circle City and with five others, and they prospected around and they found ground at Cleary, but it wasn't of any value, but he did hit it rich where his monument is now. And then after striking it, they walked up to where Cleary Summit is, where they saw smoke. So they went down to look into it, and they went to look into it, and it was Captain Barnett. This was 1902, and at that time, Captain Barnett had come up with the steamer Isabel. And his idea was to take the freight that he had left there and go up to Anna Cross, where they had a road from Eagle going to Valdez. And when Felix Pedro came and told about the gold, he changed his mind and did stay right there, and that news was scattered like wildfire of him striking gold. Then that was 1902. Then in 1903, Judge Wickersham was given ordered. He held court in Eagle to establish a courthouse in the Tanana Valley or Tanana Cross or somewhere. So he came up the river, and it hasn't been told before, but he stopped at Chena and wanted to change that name to Fairbanks, which was his friend. Fairbanks was Teddy Roosevelt's vice president, but what settlers there objected to it, so he came up here where Captain Barnett agreed. And that is where it is, in Chena and Fairbanks. And Chena at one time had 2,000 population, and it had three saloons, a dance hall, a school, a telegraph station, a roundhouse, the Chena sawmill, and the Waves, they call it, where they pulled up three boats. And by the way, we've seen six boats pulled up out of water below the present municipal power plant in Fairbanks. But getting down to Chena, it was that way. And let me say, we left this Fairbanks on a boat similar to the Mississippi style. Then we, at Tanana, we transferred to a boat similar to the Nenana, the steamer Tanana. And then up above Chena, we was transferred to a steamer Kayakuk that was still a smaller boat. Then on the other hand, all the freight was loaded on barges at St. Michael's and pushed up by the Mississippi-style boats. And then the boats to Forest Tanana, where the lighter draft boats would take the barges separately and push them up the Tanana River. And then at times they would have to lighter them on account of the low water and fall. And then at Chena, or they would, in the later fall, there was times there that they couldn't get up to Fairbanks with an empty boat, so they did carry all the freight up on the Tanana Valley Railway. And what I'd You haven't heard it published before, but Judge Wickersham wanted Fairbanks, Chena changed to Fairbanks, and he did not. So he came up here. You may not have heard that before. It's not in printing, but I heard it from 12 to 15 in 1908 or so. And it comes down to Chena at 1917. There was a big boom at Nenana, and lots of the places at Chena was torn down and moved there. I wish that Monty Hansen was in my place here. She's a brother of Einert and Tommy Townsend, and they lived there for 2 years, from 1907 to 1909. The way I remember it, they had a school there and had 16. There was a Catholic church and another church. And then in 1939, Reverend Armstead and about six of us went down there, left our cars at the Chena pumping station, walked and went to one church there, and got the hymn books out of the boxes, no roof, and we sang hymns there. And when we got through singing, there wasn't hardly a dry eye in the crowd. And then in 1939, Johnson and Hall loggers, they did go down where the international airport way is now, and then cut off, and then went through the main town of Chena, and up that Chena Bluff Hill, they built that, and beyond to Pearl Creek, where they did log a million feet of lumber that was sold to the independent mill. And first time my wife and I went down there was 1937, where we saw the steamer Reliance and Minneapolis there that was just rotting, just through no use. They had built roads and aviation was being born. And that was the way. Another thing is the Tanana Valley Railway was all rolling stock of the White Pass. And the White Pass, and I know of them building a depot, Chena, Fairbanks, Fox, Golden, Little El Dorado, and Chattanooga, and they were all the same blueprints as the depots on the White Pass. Also, that there was four of the employees of the White Pass came here, and one of them was Robert Taylor. He was the first worshipful master of Tanana Lodge Masons, and that was 1907. And so I want to stick to Chena, and I think the first automobile went there around 1943, something like that, after the roads. And they had an electric light plant conjunction with the sawmill, but it only run during nighttime. They didn't have toasters or electric refrigerators or whatnot then, so they didn't run it during the daytime. And that was run by, owned and run by Martin Harris. He was, owned the sawmill and a staunch Democrat. But however, 1913, I believe, he went he was the instigator of the stamp mill that was there. And if you go on the boat Discovery, you can see three big concrete piers. One of them was for the steam engine, and these stamp mills was, there's five to a block, and they had ten stamps. And it did run, but the first runoff they had trouble, and one man was thrown in jail, and that gave the place a black eye. And the idea was to ship all the ore from Cleary and so on to this stamp mill, have it mill there, but it just didn't pan out that way. And Martin Harris, after that, failed. He ran for a delegate against James Wickersham and was defeated. Then he left Fairbanks and went to Valdez and McCarty, and he married Miss Keenan, a former school teacher, and he was commissioner there. And when he died, Mrs. Harris took over. But I'm getting away from China.
That's all right. We don't mind.
I'm trying to stick to my point. And China was... I think that we can look back now and see that Wickersham made his mistake for insisting on Fairbanks where it is. If we could have had Fairbanks a chain, it means that they wouldn't have to lighter the boats for freight, and we wouldn't have to use the railway for freight, and it would have been a different thing. Of course, now aviation. It's hard to realize in them days, no automobiles, no auto highways, but there's wagon roads, and they all led towards the railway. And everybody burned wood. Everybody burned wood, even wood on the locomotives. And the Guggenheims and other big engineers came in here then and said, what we need is fuel for a central power plant. And that didn't materialize until 1922, when the railway came to Fairbanks and opened up the mines at Healy. And you know then that's not China. We have been down there, and one time I was down there and I saw a pump, the steam on one end and water on the other, that was used in the roundhouse, and I took it, and to make long word short, it's now down at Alaska Land here in the mining layout. And there was a Mr. McDermott, chief of police. He's the only one, and he worked there for a salary. And then when they couldn't pay him, he worked as policeman for a nothing. And then he came to Fairbanks and was chief of police. Well, rather the only policeman. When President Harding came here, and in 1930, I was talking to him, and there were three people living in China then, he told me. But in 1937, 36, my wife and I left our car at the China pumping station and walked down there with the lunch and looked around and old things and more old things, and it was wonderful. And then, I'm not praising, but in 1947, I found the heirs of the China Bluffs, Sigsby. Yeah, Ephraim Sigsby. And through lots of correspondence, I bought the 289 acres for $150. And 3 years ago, my wife and I closed a deal for $58,000. And what did touch me most was that log cabin that Mr. Sigsby had. And now Everett Hepp has torn it down and put up a home that I think's worth $100,000. So, I don't know what to say. Fairbanks has changed. A horse now is at a minimum. But in them days, an automobile was at a minimum. And I don't know how long I've talked. Mrs. Harris says 20 minutes. How long have I talked? But I think that's all. You others want to know something? Or, oh, the NC had a store there, and the Alaska Railroad tore up the rails around 1922. And it did connect up with the government farm. And when they tore up the rails, the NC company closed up their store there. And for some time, there was three rails from Fairbanks out to Happy, because there was the narrow gauge to China and Chattanooga, and then the standard gauge going to Nana. I think they tore up that third rail, everything, around 1938. And if any of you go out to the Tolovana Road and look to the north, you can see trestles and other things of the old Tanana Valley Railway. On the road going to Livengood, you go there and look to the north and you can see the bridge work there. Or you did the last time I was out there.
It's grown up now, so you can hardly see it. I was out there in the summer, and you can't hardly see it.
Yeah, well, that's possible, yeah.
I can point out where
you can also see it in the Goldstein Valley. There's a section there, some of the old bridges.
Yes, there is, yeah.
I wonder if anybody has a map at all of that old railroad cloud. Where do you go? Is this a show of the old railroad?
Yes, Mr.
Can you tell me where that stamp mill was taken that was introduced in the
city? Why, yes, I'll tell you. The best thing is to go on that boat of Mr. Binkley, and he'll make a lot of lung power. Yeah, he will point it out to you. Yes, it was, and in other words, it is about halfway up the hill.
Well, no, wasn't it moved from that location to somewhere else?
Why, yes, they took one half of it, or five stamps, and they did open up the Elms mine, I believe it was. Mr. Ilgram was the manager. That was for five stamps, and the other five was laying on the ground, and still is, to my knowledge.
Well,
And so far as quartz in Fairbanks, the only one that actually materialized is the Rhodes and Hall mine, and it afterwards turned to the Gustafsson mine. But I'm getting away from China. I don't know where they are. You can go out to the creeks. You can go out to Cleary or every place where the newsboy, wherever there was a stamp mill, and you'll see them scattered because they all were a failure, and now the Rhodes Hall is a failure. Huh? That was the name of the mine. I think it was. I know Mr. Pilgrim was superintendent. But that is it. Judge Wickersham wanted the place named after Fairbanks, so it was. But if he had stayed at Chena, it would save lots of river transportation. But we all make mistakes. The only man that didn't make a mistake is friends nailed him to the cross when he was 32. So that's why all of us men, you ladies, haven't reached 32 yet. No.
What about the farms? You mentioned 60s now.
Yeah.
And
were
there some others in that
Well, no, there was some, but so far as the farms, that was on the Farmers Loop Road.
Okay.
And
can I correct you? Don't the Belden Farm ring a bell? Belden was right.
Yes, I know, but that's on the Farmers Loop Road.
No, it's right below Chena Bluff because that's where Mr. Conrad.
Belden.
Right down to the
Okay.
And then there's another farm
up
alongside of where the pump station was.
Yeah.
In there.
Yes, that was Mr. Hyde.
Yeah,
Mr. Hyde had a farm. Yeah.
The other.
Yeah, but the bulk of the farming was on the Farmers Loop Road. And it was in clover there. They could cut wood and sell it and then farm in summer. And raise oat hay and feed it to the horses, then cut haul wood in the winter. They had perpetual motion. And it went along fine until they tried to turn that oat hay into gasoline for tractors. There's where they had trouble.
Could I add a bit about Bill D. Sigsby?
Yeah.
She wanted to know about him. We had our motorboat to know in 1914-15, and we used to go down river, and we would take Mrs. Gillespie with her. This was just a friend at that time. His daughter is one that wrote the crew in the far north, and his stepdaughter. And he and his wife would go down, and he'd take one of the children. And we'd leave them off there at the bluff because we were going down river to hunt a fish. And then they would climb the hill up the building to see, and she put berries up there, and they'd jam the stuff for building. And then when we came back, we had a old funny old horn, like an automobile horn on the roof, just to pick up and honk at, and you blow up, you know, a little bit of boat. And you blow that, they come down, and scramble in the boat, and then we bring them up home. And so one time I scrambled up there with her, and he had the cutest cabin up there, and he just surprised the garden he had, and oh, the most wonderful raspberries growing around, a great big, he just cultivated the wild raspberries, and they were just great big raspberries. And so he's a great friend of the Gillette. And then when we'd pick him up, sometimes he'd come up home or he'd walk up from there, clear up and cross the ridge, you know, motor. And then we'd run him down home. When he got through with visiting, we'd run him down home. And up until about maybe 10, 15 years ago, we corresponded. And then all of a sudden, he dropped out. So I don't know what happened. But he changed maybe once or twice a year. We exchange a motor.
Another thing is we had lots of excursions down there when a governor or some celebrity would come down. We would go down there to greet him, and They didn't have enough coaches, but they put seats on flat cars. And we had a lot of fresh air. And in winter time, when they did open up that stamp mill, they didn't use flat cars for the men, but we stood up in the box cars, and the regular coaches was used for the ladies. Yeah. But it was nice. You had a question, Mr. Mays? Why, I'll tell you, when it came up here, it was owned by Charles Adams, and then afterwards it was bought by the NC Company, or rather, Northern Navigation Company, and then around 1912, they took it to St. Michael's into the Husqvarna. And somewheres along the Husqvarna River, it is, its bones are still there. Another thing I forgot about Chena, there's three people buried there. And one time, Gus Conrad, Mr. Sullivan, and Mr. Brooks. Mr. Brooks was one, a pallbearer for one of them, and we went down there and tried to find them, but we couldn't. It looked like a forest fire had went through it. And in them days, it was all wooden markers.
Came up during Alaska Land, and it used to be over on the Enana, and I believe Frank Young might be able to give some light as to that.
Well, it was acquired through Mr. Cassidy, you know.
Oh, Jim. Yeah. He probably
got
some
such equipment. Yes, it was on the car.
When they dismantled the boat, they finally made a barge out on the Custer-Quim, and they took the wheel out of the wheelhouse and down in the NC offices in Seattle. And they had it there for many years, and Jim made some arrangements, and we got it up here.
There was the steamer Tanna, a private boat by Captain Langley. It was on this Yukon for around 1912 when business got slack and he went to the Kuskokwim River. And then the other way, the NC had a boat called the Delta, I believe, and they took that from the Kuskokwim River and brought it to the Yukon. It was of a lighter draft, and I've made a list of 100 boats on the Yukon and tributaries, and I saw where one man made a list of 300. And there was a Will H. Isom, a great freighter, and I understand it was the biggest freighting boat in the world. It was used until around 1910. And it's hard to realize from Valdez to Fairbanks down to Nome, there was a roadhouse every 15, 20 miles. And in the summertime, they would cut wood and sell it for the steamboats. And then they would shoot a moose, have a roadhouse, feed the passengers moose. And, yeah.
Mr. Davis, I contacted an Indian who used to work on the steamboat in probably in the early teens. And he told me that the steamboats that came up to Chena to Fairbanks, when they went back, they had to go in reverse, but they couldn't make the, they couldn't turn in there.
No. No, they all turned over here. Over here, well, I know they all turned. There is a corrugated iron building there. Once was a slough there. It is where Nietzsche's Cafe is now, and it was called the Moose John Slough. And it carried a good big body of water. It's all filled in now, but they would all back down into there and turn around. Although there was one boat that had to go down to Dead Man's Slough to turn around. That was the steamer Powers, I believe.
Do you recall, Abby, that across from the Indian village and also a fish mission?
Yes, there was, yeah. There was a fish camp run by a fisherman Mike, they called it. Yeah. And so far as the wages on the boat, you got a deckhand got 75 a month, and if you stayed the whole season, they would pay your way to Seattle, and then pay your way back if you wanted to work. And the captain of the boat got 2,500. The pilot and chief engineer got 2,000, and the second engineer, I think, got 1,500, and so on. That was in the blame early days.
I worked on the Alliance one summer when I was a kid.
Yeah.
We got $50 a month, I was.
Yeah, well.
In the same proposition, we went outside. In fact, it was a year that the Sophia went down.
Well, 1919, yeah. 1918, yeah. And when we were drafted in the Army in 1918, we took the steamer Jacobs at Chena. But there was a first draft and second draft, but they had high water then and took the boys from Fairbanks. And we had three stages of water, and there was a steamer Julia B. of Mississippi style. It would get three barges, and they waited for the high water, and they came up here all the way up with the three barges and made the three trips a year.
And isn't the Julia B. Dawson? Isn't
yes, that? Yes, it's the Dawson.
Rotting up.
Yeah, Dawson. So is the Seattle number 3, yeah. Swatka.
And one that there's no name on.
Yes.
The Isom, that big boat came up to Fairbanks, the only time it ever got to Fairbanks, from 1909 in high water. We had such high water in 1909. And when the breakup was, the big chunks of ice went up. The library wasn't there then. Went up into the loft and then we were there. It's just a funny little tight building there. And the chunks of ice went way up in there and up into the building. All along. We got there all along First Salmon in 1909. Big chunks of ice came up there. And then the ice didn't come up. And they didn't think she was going to get back again. They laid down, but she shoved two barges and came up. And that's the only time she ever got up here. And I had that in. Beautiful big boat. It had two big stacks and lots of fancy iron grillwork on it. But it didn't make money. I think that they had to take it down to some other river, not Alaska River. They took some river outside. Mm-hmm. I think Columbia. They didn't make any money for their owners up here, so they took it back outside.
Mm-hmm. Well, Edby, did they have a bakery at Chena?
Yeah.
And they had two stores, NC Company and...
Another Vachon and Sterling was there, and Mr. Tonsis was the head warehouse man. And in 1909, they came to Fairbanks and was on the corner of First and Lacey. Yeah, where that laundry is now.
Did they have any churches at Chena?
Two that I know of. The Catholic Church and this Protestant Church. They had a social hall, too.
Now, did they have a saloon?
Yeah, two of them had a newspaper, too.
Had a newspaper.
Yeah.
Do I understand correctly that the building that's located right to the east of the News Miner, the old log building there, two-story building, was moved from Chena? Town site?
No.
That's incorrect.
No, there was one on the corner of Illinois there that was moved from Chena, but it burned down. Illinois and Pennsylvania Avenue there. There were two stores.
I imagine they had a school in Chena.
Yes, they did, yeah.
Do you remember the names of any of the teachers, early teachers?
No, I don't. I got all that from Aynard. I wish Amante was here. She could rattle off more than I do and is a faster talker.
I might find some of her history in our history books. You have quite a history in our pioneer history
books.
I might find some
of
her.
Yeah, fine.
We could get her to make her when she comes up.
And my father was on the school board. We had a school on Garden Island once, and it was financed by the territory. The way it was, they told us that as far as the building, they told us to build the building and supply the fuel, and they would supply the school books and the school teacher, but we could select the school teacher, but it would have to be certain standards that the Bureau of Education applied by. You couldn't pick everybody, but with their standards, and out at Fox, and then at Fairbanks Creek and Chattanooga, they'd have a building just about a third the size of this with a partition in, and there's where the school teacher lived. And you could get a teacher from, you get a school if you had nine pupils or more. And their wages was $175 a month. And they got $35 a month for janitor work. Invariably, the school was in such a location that nobody else would want the job as janitor. And this Lucille Lavery, you know her, Lucille Meath, she taught at Wiseman 1 year and had the same proposition, same wages.
Was there a U.S. Marshal or a commissioner at Chena?
Yes, there was. There was a commissioner, and wherever there's a commissioner, there's a marshal, deputy marshal, and they had a jail. And one time they had 2,000 population.
Andy, there's a remains of a telegraph line that goes
along
the top of the ridge there. Do you know what point that telegraph?
Yes, that was before. That telegraph line was installed before wireless. And then it did start at Valdez and came down and came through your property and mine and down to Fort Gibbon, then down to St. Michael's and Nome. The government insisted wherever they had a post, they'd have a telegraph line. So they would have it for government as well as private. I think that came here in 1905. It was run by the Signal Corps.
Do you know when it was abandoned?
Oh, 1912. I know when they did build the wireless station in Fairbanks, that big high tower, and then they did bonded it. They had a big high tower at Circle City too. Then that telegraph line went from Tanacross up to Eagle, then into Dawson. Everything was telegraphed then. And the newspapers would get a sheet of paper, 8x10, all abbreviate, and then they would pad. What you got was bull.
Has it changed since?
Well, they get it more from the horse's mouth now. It isn't abbreviated. They get it. They can get it by telephone.
You mentioned a newspaper down at the town of Chena. They didn't print it down there. They had an office and a place to gather news down there. But my father and W.F. Thompson printed the news at the old newspaper factory to the Masonic temples on the lower floor.
Yeah, that was afterwards. This one I speak about, run by George Bellows.
Yes, George Bellows was.
And that was before what you speak about.
Well, that could have been before.
And yes,
yeah.
And
then I know
yeah.
that Dad and in 1989, they went down there and got the news.
Yeah, that brings in another the thing. W.F. Thompson had the Chena Miner, they called it. And he jumped into the transportation company so hard that in order to shut him up, they did buy out for him the Fairbanks News. So he came up here and called it the News Miner.
Yes, Dad had the news.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was.
What
year was that? 1909.
Huh? Oh, it's called W.F. Thompson.
And when was that? So, brought the news
right. Oh, 1908, I would say. 1908.
George Bellows had the first one.
Most of you can correct me, but the main thing I want to bring out is how Fairbanks was started. If Judge Wickersham had rescinded and stayed at Chena, things would have been different.
Did you ever know a U.S. Marshal by the name of Hanson?
No, Hanson, no.
I heard one time that the Judge Thompson had a newspaper out of
stuff.
Yes, a Ridgetop. Ridgetop. Yeah, Ridgetop, yeah.
Well, Frank was saying something about an issue of the Chena paper that you had.
Yeah, I've got it.
You didn't happen to bring it tonight.
Oh, I've got it.
Does that have Bellows as the editor?
Yes. Uh-huh. Printed in 1904.
Yeah, I tried to stick to Chena. I tried to stick to my subject.
The Chena News,
yeah. Yeah. I've seen some.
I didn't get any papers from there at all from Fairbanks.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh no.
What happened to the sawmill?
Well, yes, I do know here. I understand that, but so far as that sawmill, why there was another one of them started down 3 miles below at the steamboat slough, and it was run by Harry Marsh and someone else, and they got the sawmill there, And I know it's a left-hand sawmill, what we call, and they use that in the up there, up at that Salcher Slough, I think they call it. There was lots and lots of lumber. And before he started, Mr. Noyes had a mill there for 2 or 3 years. And I worked at both of the mills in 1917. But that one of that Marsh started was sort of a false alarm because they didn't have a boiler big enough.
The name of the mill was right at the mouth. Did you come out of the Chena and start into the town of Chena? What mill was that on the point there?
There's only one. You mean a sawmill?
Yes,
it was a sawmill. Yeah, why, it was the Chena Light and Power, Chena Lumber Company Light and Power.
And who was the owner, do you know?
Martin Harris.
Oh, Martin Harris.
Yeah,
Martin,
he was a good man, even if he was born and raised in Russia. He's a good man.
My father was more positive, and we've talked about this before. Did he work in that sawmill, or did he run the sawmill?
Hodges, I didn't hear the name.
When he came up from Kodiak and had his sawmill there, and then he had the sawmill over in Seward, did he run the one up here?
I never heard the name. He may have been, but I never heard the name.
Yeah.
What year was he up there?
You told me about the property that he owned over in 1935 that you were trying to buy from him.
Yeah, no.
You called him the big logger, which is...
Yeah, no, I haven't heard of him.
What was the name?
Hodges.
This was my father, and he does recall him sometimes, and I wondered if this was a sawmill that he ran. He ran some sawmill up here, and I'm always trying to find out.
It was more than likely that was the independent mill.
Yes,
that was the big mill. I don't remember that name.
It was about 1912.
Yeah. Fairbanks, no, no, 5th and Cushman, they had a bridge there. There was a slough and a bridge. The one was for horses, and the one on each side was for people to walk on. There was a slough there, and it's all covered up now. And there was a slough over in Grail, where Fairlanes is now, and Pay and Say, that's all covered up. And I spoke about where Nita's Cafe was. There's all a good size slough there. And good size slough, and they had the bridge there where in front of Nita's Cafe, then farther on there was a railway bridge. Yeah.
Mr. Davis, where Chena City used to be, isn't that all out in the river now? Has the river cut all that land out?
Some of it. Yes, it has taken First Avenue, and where the Chena stamp mill was, there was a whole lot of ground in front, but now it's all washed away. The channel changes all the time.
You can tell by that picture, by the hill back there, the stamp mill was up against that hill, and now you see the water is running right against the hill, so you see all that ground there, and right on down, and it's all...
Where the railway was, First Avenue, that is just about washed away, it is. 1937, you could see the tides and everything.
Would it be possible to mark a trail for the old railway?